Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
Will you give me a tour?
Gladly. The safe is in Mr. Jennings' bedroom. That'll be stop number one. He and my father used to ride together back in the 30s. Before I was born. You hear that? Here's what you can win in this game.
Now you look. It's a new car!
This morning, the president met in the Oval Office with foreign dignitaries and cultural exchange students from the Republic of China. He presented them with a statue of the American Eagle, our symbol of peace and freedom throughout the world. The president warmly encouraged future trade relations in...
Hello. We thought we heard something. I'm Thomas Franklin.
Hello, Thomas. I'm Chance the Gardener.
The garden?
Yes.
Yes, of course. Mr. Chance, this is Ms. Hayes.
Mr. Chance, I'm very pleased to meet you.
Yes.
Yes.
We're with Franklin Jennings Roberts. The law firm handling the estate?
Yes, Thomas, I understand.
Are you waiting for someone? An appointment? I thought, what
am I going to do? Yes, Louise will bring me my lunch. Who's going to date me
now? All kidding aside, Mr. Chance, may I ask just what you're doing here?
I live here. Well, she must know a lot about
everything. There is no mention of a gardener. In fact, according to our inventories, there hasn't been a man employed here since 1933. Except for Mr. Joe Saracini, a brick mason who did some repairs to a wall. He was here for 2.5 days in 1952.
Yes, I remember Joe. He was very fat, had short hair, and showed me pictures from a funny little book.
Some pictures?
Yes, of men and women.
Oh. Hello and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
We are still doing our weekly shows. Still there. Although, as of today, you and I are both vaccinated.
Yes, I just got my second shot today. And
I'm sorry, I don't mean to share that. That might be personal medical information.
I'm sorry.
I don't mean to invade your privacy about that.
No, I want people to know about that. I did get my second shot today. I'm super happy about it. I told Margot I was listening to the audiobook of today's book, which was Dustin Hoffman, and the dulcet tones of his voice. I fell asleep for the last 10 minutes. So Margot's going to fill us in on the end of the book. But we'll go through the regular rigmarole.
Yes. Welcome, welcome, welcome. If you are new to Book Versus Movie, there are several places where you can interact with Margot D., and Margot P. and other listeners of this podcast on the internet.
Yes, we're always looking for suggestions. So we do have a basic Facebook page that you could like. You could write on there if you want to. But we're much more interactive in our Facebook group. So just type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group on Facebook. It's a very safe, nice place on Facebook. We keep it that way. It's just about books and movies and suggestions that people have and remembrances of books of movies in the past, that kind of thing. It's super fun. We're also on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter and Instagram, you spell out book versus a movie, or feel free to shoot us an email. You can send it to Book vs. Movie Podcast, spelled it all out, at gmail.com.
I forgot to tell you before we came on the air, I have some bookmarks on their way.
What?
Yeah. Finally.
Oh, that's amazing. So if you guys would like bookmarks or stickers or coasters, we got these cute, adorable coasters. Shoot us an email, send us your address, and we'll drop them in the mail for you.
Today's book and movie is Being There, and we are going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But before we get to that, I just wanted to say, I think we have to mention the episode you did on your other podcast.
On Peter Sellers?
On Peter Sellers. And I'm sure we'll talk about it when we get to the movie. But for those of you who don't listen to Margo's other podcast, What a Creep. I mean, she's got more than that, but specifically I'm talking about What a Creep. She did an amazing episode about Peter Sellers, and this is one of his last film roles. Is that right?
Yes, it's his last big role. He died about a year after this movie came out at 54. We talk about Creeps from the past to the present. And it's funny because there's been some people flowing over from that show into this show. And so they're wondering, like, well, why are we talking about him? I'm like, he's a great actor. It's a great movie. I mean, if you want to know about his overall creepiness, and it is there, definitely check out What a Creep and look for Peter Sellers' podcast, that episode.
We should probably link it in the Facebook group.
I'll do that, actually. That's a good idea.
Yeah, that'd be great. Because it's worth a listen, especially because he's so integral to the production of this movie. But before we can get to any of that, we got to talk about our author.
Yes, it's Jerry. Jerzy Kosinski. He was born in Poland in 1933. He emigrated to America later on. He survived Poland during World War II. And then came to the U.S. as a citizen. He's written many things. He's very famous for a novel called The Painted Bird, which I never, ever even heard of. But it's a story about, he has all these stories about surviving in Poland during World War II as a Jewish kid and being left by his parents and being in these horrible situations. And there's a lot of like sexual assault and abuse. And then it turns out that it was actually a fictionalized version of what happened, and he actually was raised by his parents in Poland, and they actually survived going undercover as Catholic. He's a very interesting man, fascinating writer, fascinating person. There's all this stuff. There's a documentary I saw about him, and it's about an hour long, and it's called Bookmarks. I'll post that into the Facebook group as well.
Am I remembering, wasn't it the case that like to come to the United States, he like forged all this stuff to say that there was a foundation which he made up that was sponsoring him to come here?
He's had some forgeries and plagiarism allegations thrown against him for this work Being There, for his other works as well. He sort of said, oh, no, I had people that were like proofreaders for me and they helped me. But that's all my words. But then some of them said, no, he stole from other Polish writers. Fascinating man. Definitely a product of, I'd say, the 60s and the 70s, that you could be somebody that could brag about going to sex clubs on the David Letterman show and people would just giggle. No one would think. And I don't want to kink shame anybody. Like, whatever you do, you do. But he was a very...
You wouldn't do that now is the point. Like, that would not happen today.
It wouldn't be done in this way today. I think it would. But anyway, he was so... interesting. He was one of those people like they always wanted to have at cocktail parties. You know, he had good stories. He was very handsome, very lean and tan. He loved to ski. And he was with his wife through the end, and she was totally okay with him. He liked to go to, we'll talk about this with the character, he was a voyeur when it came to sex. And that's a big part of this character, Chance/Chauncey. I'm not saying he's just a guy that likes sex and writing, but he was kind of a guy that likes sex and writing. And he, unfortunately, died by suicide in 1991. There was a bit of controversy about him towards the end of his life. How much did he write? How much was true? How much was not true? There's people in Poland who don't like him very much, and there's people from Poland who think he's a hero. He's a very, very interesting man. And that's Jerzy Kosinski.
And this book, Being There, is from 1970. I had never read it before. I don't think I've ever read any of his works before. Mm-hmm. It's a quick read. I was surprised how much I liked it. Like when I started reading it, I was like, I'm not so sure about this, but it's rather charming. It's not really exactly told from Chance/Chauncey's point of view. It's, you know, it's being told as sort of a third person, but the details that you get are not much beyond what Chance himself has access to until you get later on in the book. So it begins with this fellow Chance, who is a gardener at a fancy mansion. I don't think it specifies where it takes place, but I think we're to assume it is sort of Washington, D.C., because he never gets on a plane or travels a great distance. So he lives on the grounds of this mansion. He's the gardener. We're told that the man who's only called the old man, the man whose mansion it is, lives there, doesn't have a family or anything, but he's got servants, and Chance is one of them. And that Chance had, I forget what his origin was, but anyway, he was basically like a foundling.
Yeah, I think his mother.
This guy like scooped him up.
Yeah, I don't know if like the mother had a relationship with the dad.
Oh, right.
With him.
It's not clear.
But it's never. Yeah. The point is like it's never clear. He never goes to school. He never learns to read. He never goes to a doctor or to a dentist. He spends his whole life.
He has zero records.
Nothing. And we think he's about 50, maybe 40 or 50. Mm-hmm. He's middle-aged. Yeah. And he has kind of a contentious relationship with one of the maids that works there, who's funny and gives him kind of a hard time. But he's an innocent, we're supposed to think. And that the person that ran the house, his benefactor, I don't know, is that the person whom I'm thinking of? Benefactor.
Yeah.
The benefactor would leave him television sets as he was done with them. He always, that guy liked television, so he gave it to Chance.
So consequently, he has like, half a dozen television sets that he watches. He doesn't understand the lines between what he sees on television and reality are completely blurred to him.
He's very literal.
Mm-hmm. He thinks that the people are actually inside the television set, for example.
Right.
And he thinks when he sees the television on TV that it's a tiny little man.
Right.
That's in the television set.
And the benefactor just dies one day, and these two lawyers show up and say to him, "Hi, what's your name? What's your background? There's nobody that's been hired to work here in forever. Who are you? What is this all about?" And he just says, "I'm Chance. I've been here my whole life. I've never gone to school. I've never gone to the doctor. I've never gone to the dentist."
He never left the house.
Never
left the grounds. And also, he's also very, we're led to believe, like he's super skilled. And it's quite an elaborate garden. It's a big, fancy, you know, mansion with an estate. And he takes care of all of the gardens around the house. So we are led to believe that he's super skilled at that, but he has never left the grounds since he was a very small child.
Right. And so when the benefactor dies, there's nobody there to give the house to, and the benefactor didn't set him up for after that. So he has to then leave the house, and he doesn't know what to do. He packs a bag and he just starts walking, and he almost gets run over by a car. And it's a very nice luxury car, and a beautiful woman comes out and with furs and jewels and all this stuff. And her name is Eve Rand, E-E. It's like Evelyn Edith or something like that.
Yeah. In the book, she goes by E-E.
Mm-hmm. And she feels really bad. "Oh, you poor thing. What's going on? We'll take you back to my house." Turns out she's a much younger wife of a man who's very powerful in the business world and also very old and very sick, and he's bedridden. So they already have doctors and things like that and wheelchairs and stuff to heal him. And so she's also probably worried he's going to sue them or something, but she starts to take care of him. I think they sort of hint that he's really handsome. So she's also attracted to him, but she brings him back to the house. And he slowly just takes in the information as he goes. He doesn't, he's very good at yes and. Like, he just sort of like keeps whatever they ask. He's like, all right, fine, sure. Yes, of course. Yes. He gets his first doctor's exam and he has to picture what it's like for the needle to go into the arm because he never felt it before. He has to remember from all the doctor shows he's seen. So it's those kinds of things. It's really.
That's his point of reference for everything, is what he would have seen on television in the 1960s. Right. So,
And we've talked about this before with other books and movies that have had that theme about television and the media in the 60s and 70s, especially. And we were told, oh, it was all crap. It's all garbage. You know, your brain's going to rot if you watch this box, and it's going to be, it's so bad for you, and you're not as smart as other people. It's very, very like critical of television. And so that's part of like what's in the culture anyway. Is they called it the idiot box. Like, it would just make you stupid to watch it. So this is the person that is sort of the of that. Like,
it's been raised by it. Me. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's been raised by television. Well, it turns out that Benjamin Rand, who's the husband of E.E., is very powerful, and he's connected to our president. And he comes by the house and starts talking to on the way, she calls, he says, I'm Chance and I'm the gardener. And she goes, oh, your name is Chauncey Gardner. And then he becomes Chauncey Gardner to everybody with no background, nothing. And the president shows up and starts asking him questions about the recession and what should happen with the economy. And he goes, well, you know, in the spring and summer, things bloom. And during the fall and winter, it goes to sleep and you have to work at it. And he's thought of it.
He talks
brilliant.
About the one subject that he knows anything about in answer to everything. And everybody thinks he's so wise. Ooh.
Right.
Oh, I see.
And he becomes, the president starts quoting him. And then the Washington Post and the New York Times want to quote him because the president just directly quoted him. And nobody can figure out who this guy is. But in the meantime, the media starts inviting him in all the talk shows and doing interviews. He gets big ratings. People like him because he loves television. Like, that's all he's ever wanted to do was to be on television. So he was really excited to be there. And people, well, by the way, we should say that we spoil all the details if this is your first time. So anyway, so the husband dies, and then the president, this is like, well, I told Margot I got my shot today and I had 20 minutes left in the book and I literally just passed out and I didn't have time. So she was reading me the last chapter, you guys. Right. So why don't you kind of pick up like the last part of the story?
The husband dies, Mr. Rand, E.E.'s husband. And during this short time, E.E. has been spending a lot of time with Chauncey, as she calls him. And because Chance demeanor and way of processing information, you know, he never gets overheated. He never gets too excited about things. He never gets angry. He doesn't say much on his own. So everybody thinks he's such a good listener, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when he does speak, he speaks in these, what they think are like very deep, you know, metaphors when he's really just talking about gardening. E.E. gradually falls in love with him. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where a man has fallen in love with him as well.
Yes.
At a cocktail party, and they have this encounter. Like, he's not very interested in like sexuality. He doesn't really know very much about it. You know, he's really just about television and that's about it. So he doesn't get involved when the man is very interested in him. And he doesn't really get involved when E.E. is very interested in him either. Mm-hmm. But her take and the man's take are very different on that. Anyway, after the E.E.'s husband dies, there's sort of like a vacuum of influence, you know, among these Washington elite and the president. And something happens where, like, there's an election coming up and the president... I think something happens, like there's a scandal with his vice president or something like that, and they have to find somebody to run with him in his place. And so the president is trying to like think about, you know, who can we get that's going to be scandal free. And his advisors are like, well, people seem to like this Chauncey Gardner guy, but we can't find anything about him. And so they launch this investigation, and there's no documentation of this man anywhere. And so they sort of leap to the conclusion that maybe he's a Soviet spy, or perhaps there's sort of a conspiracy in the intelligence world that they've destroyed this man's records. They don't want him to, you know, to be involved in politics or whatever reason that they have, all made up, of course. And so the president's sort of pondering asking Chance/Chauncey to run as his vice president. Okay, so then there's the final chapter, which you don't know. It seems real, or at least it starts out real. So it seems that it's at some kind of a party or a gathering of very powerful people. And Chance is there. E.E. is there. And Chance is kind of moving in this crowded ballroom of very, very powerful people. And then all of a sudden, that whole world fades. He kind of gets a glimpse of himself as others see him for like a split second. And then everything fades. And you don't know, like, has somebody there assassinated him because they feel he's a threat? You definitely get the impression that he's dead. You know, did he have a heart attack? You know, what did somebody poison him? You just don't know. It's very obtuse. Like, it's very hard to figure out what I was telling Margo, like, and it happens really suddenly. Like, I went back and read it several times to try to figure out at what point are we no longer in reality, right? But it definitely seems as though he's dead. And now he is walking out into a garden at the very, very end. And he's walking into like this beautiful, beautiful garden. But we are led to believe that it is, you know, he's dead. He's dead. This is like his little heaven. Mm-hmm. And that's how the book ends.
And it does.
It's very interesting.
It's really well written. It's really mm-hmm. interesting. I would recommend, I mean, if you like Audible, by the way, we do have a promotion with them, audibletrial.com/bookversusmovie. But Dustin Hoffman narrates it and does a wonderful job of it. I mean, he's also kind of a creep, but that's for another discussion for another day. But yeah, it's I super enjoyed it. I thought it was wonderful. And I loved learning about Jerzy Kosinski. I don't know if I'd want to hang out with him, but he it does very well. And he's had other novels that did very well, and he's won awards. But in 1970, 71, he meets Peter Sellers. And Peter Sellers, at that time, he had gone from being like a Stanley Kubrick favorite in the mid-60s to making a lot of really terrible comedies in the late 60s, early 70s. And so his career was on the downturn. And he becomes friends with Hal Ashby, who we talked about when we talked about Harold and Maude. And we really went into his kind of backstory in that episode. So if you're interested in his history, which you should be, mm-hmm. if you like movies, because this
yeah,
I think
really
this
interesting
is his,
guy.
Very interesting man. I'm going to spoil. I loved this movie. I watched it last night and
it's really good.
It's really good. So they work. This is 1971. Then all of a sudden, Peter Sellers does the Pink Panther. And when I was a kid, I loved those Pink Panther movies.
So did I.
I thought he was hilarious. And he does, there's a kind of Murder by Death. There's a bunch of movies he makes in the 70s that make money. And so he can finally now do this passion project. And the man had a heart attack. He had 13 heart attacks in a week in the early to mid, when he's married to Britt Eklund and like 63 or something. His mm-hmm. heart, he knew he wasn't going to live a long life. It's kind of hard to watch sometimes in the movie because he's only 52, 53 when he films it, but he looks much, much older.
He does, yeah.
Yeah, and so should we play the trailer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll play the trailer.
I'm Chance, the gardener.
The gardener?
Yes, since I was a child. I worked in this garden.
Then you really are a gardener?
Oh, yes.
May I ask your name?
Chance the Gardener.
Mr. Chancey Gardener, are you related to Basil and Perdita Gardener?
No, I'm not related to Basil and Perdita.
Gobbledygook. You know, Chauncey, there's something about you. You don't play games with words to protect yourself.
And no brains at all. The stuff with rice pudding between the ears.
On television, Mr. President, you look much smaller.
Dumb as a jackass.
As long as the roots are not severed, all is well. And all will be well in the garden.
In the garden. Coffin, I'll leave some information on Mr. Chauncey Gardner's background. What do you mean he's got no background? That's impossible.
Listen to that boy.
Mr. Gardner, the New York Times spoke of your peculiar brand of optimism. What was your reaction to that?
I do not know what it means.
Oh, he was very clever, keeping it at a third grade level. That's what they understand.
He's very, very sexy. But I think he's brilliant.
I raised that boy.
It's always somewhat surprising to find men like yourself working so intimately with the president and yet somehow managing to remain relatively unknown.
Yes, it is surprising.
And look at him now.
I can't write.
Well, I heard he speaks eight languages.
I can't read. I like to watch TV.
All you gotta be is white in America to get whatever you want.
I understand.
USA. Chance slash Chauncey, excuse me, is Peter Sellers. He died the following year. He, like I said, he had a, but this is his probably one of his biggest roles ever besides Inspector Clouseau. I think it's one of the ones that really sort of people identify with, especially movie nerds. We have Shirley MacLaine as Eve Rand, who's beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah, she's great in this.
Melvin Douglas as Benjamin Rand. He's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a murderer's row, like really great. Jack Warden as President Bobby.
Yeah.
Richard Dysart plays Dr. Ellenby. And we one other person I want to mention for sure is Ruth Attaway. She plays Louise. And she is.
Oh, she's great.
She is the black maid that worked with him. And she gives Chance a really hard time in the beginning of the movie because the benefactor dies and she doesn't think he has any respect. When it, we'll go into her, but we'll definitely talk about her scene coming up. But when we first get into this movie, and I would say, I watched this last night. I super love this movie. It's just so good.
It's very good. I think. Well, you know, the screenplay is by Kaczynski. You know, he also wrote the screenplay, and mm-hmm. so obviously the it's a very sensitive adaptation mm-hmm. of his own source material. I think that the story choices, there's some differences between the book and the movie that I think are great. I think they work really well for the movie, you know, even though it's different than the book, like the end, for example, and we'll talk about that when we get to it. But the way that the movie establishes who Chance is, you know, you know, this weird world that he's been living in his whole life, that wonderful mansion, which I put the tour in the Facebook group.
Yes, so
you can take a virtual tour of that mansion. It's in Pasadena. It's a museum, but right now it's closed to the public. But this really cool old house. And, you know, he wears his benefactor's hand-me-downs. So he wears these old-timey, rather elegant clothes, but they're old. They're like, you know, 40 years old. And how much he cares for the plants, you know, how beautiful the garden is, gorgeous, and how, you know, he definitely is skilled with them. And then he's got these televisions all over the place that are playing all the time. And it's not like he has particular things that he likes. He just has all kinds of random crap on the TVs all over the place, running all the time. And very early on, the old man dies. We never know what his name is. And like you were saying, that scene with Louise, which really establishes, like really firmly establishes everything that you need to know about Chance. You know, that she, where she gets angry with him for not seeming to care that the benefactor has died. And then she stops herself and was like, oh, she apologizes because she realizes, you know, she understands that he's processing it as well as he can.
He makes a really interesting choice in that Peter Sellers is British. He has just a very flat accent, and his eyes, Inspector Clouseau, he was very flibbertigibbety, a lot of movement, a lot of using voices and moving his and mugging for the camera. He doesn't do any of that here. It's such a spare performance that you have to be really have a lot of charisma to have you shine through that.
Oh, yes.
He doesn't yell. He never raises his voice. He barely laughs. He barely, you know, he kind of smiles, but it's very
barely. Yeah.
Yes.
And not even a lot of, like Marco said, like very, this speech pattern is very much based on Stan Laurel, who I love. And I love the way he spoke, Stan Laurel, but it's very flattened. And he almost never has any kind of inflection or emphasis on any single syllable that he says. It's very like utilitarian use of speech. And yet you are just riveted. It's really amazing.
Shut down and closed by the attorneys.
What did I tell you? That's exactly what I mean. The businessman today is at the mercy of kid lawyers from the SEC.
It's happening to everyone, I'm afraid. The way things are going, they'll probably legislate the medical profession as we know it right out of existence.
Yes, right out of existence.
So they tell the lawyers come by and they say, look, who are you? Where are you from? And he's like, I'm from here. I've never been from anywhere else. I've never been to the doctor, blah, blah, blah. And I love the use of music in this movie. Mm-hmm. So he leaves the home and it's like this gorgeous home, like Margot describes. And then he walks out a door and he's just kind of, he's in a neighborhood in DC. And he's this white man in this very old suit with a briefcase, with the umbrella. And at first they're playing this like jazzier version of 2001 Space Odyssey.
The disco
version of it, which really works.
It's really cool.
It's super cool. And he comes out and he has a little talking to with these kids that are outside playing basketball. And they're like, yeah, you tell Raphael, he better not come here. He's like, okay, I'll be sure to tell Raphael. Turns out that kid grew up to be a bassist for the Allman Brothers. The actor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was cool. And here's something, like, I forgot. There's so much 70s stuff here, too, that, like, there's a Sesame Street clip with Buffy St. Marie.
Yep.
I remember listening to that. I mean, Margo and I are old, by the way. We're the olds. Yep.
Yes. I remember watching that, being a child and watching that on television. Yes, I do remember that very clearly.
And then he gets hit by the car that contains Shirley MacLaine, and she looks beautiful. And she gets him into the car and he's been run over.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. And I love the way that in the movie, because again, as a choice for the movie, I thought this was such a great way of doing this. So he's walking down the street. He's in this not really great neighborhood. I don't know what Shirley MacLaine's doing there, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's walking down the neighborhood and he walks past. This is how it used to be, that places that sold television sets would have them in the window, and they would have a security camera facing out to the street. So as you were walking by the television store, you would see yourself on all the screens. It was like a thing that TV stores did. So he's walking by such a TV store. So he's seeing a bunch of TV screens. That's nothing new to him. But to see himself on the screen, yeah, it's magical. How am I in there? And so he's walking backwards. Like if I walk backwards, like do I get bigger or smaller kind of thing? He's playing just like you see. And you would see children do that on street corners in front of those stores all the time in those days when they had those kind of setups. Kids would walk by and see themselves on the camera and get mesmerized. Like, What happens when I walk backwards? What happens when I walk forwards? What happens if I stand on one leg? And so he's doing that and not realizing that he's stepping into the street where he gets hit by the car.
Which
I thought that was such a great, awesome way of doing that.
It's very, very, there's so many great looking shots too.
Yeah.
It's visually, yep. It's beautiful. The cinematographer is Caleb Deschanel. Is he with the Deschanel sisters? I wonder if that they're related to him. Anyway. So he gets in this car. Shirley MacLaine picks him up, gets him into the car. He's been injured. They really run over his leg and he's kind of trying to like maintain his composure. He's in, must be in immense pain. And he then realizes she has a television in the backseat of her car, which means she's really rich because that was a power move in the day back then.
Oh, are you kidding? In 1979?
Yeah. You were really stupid rich. Like you were really showing off. And he starts flipping around the channels. I forgot about this, but there's Cheech and Chong had a song called Basketball Jones.
I had totally forgotten about that song.
I forgot. Oh my God. The older stoner kids in my neighborhood would love Cheech. All the kids love Cheech and Chong. But that
yes.
particular song, I remember kids singing Basketball Jones. They have that with him watching the video with her. She doesn't know what she's watching. And then they go to this very beautiful home. It's really, I can't describe it to you. It's just so well done.
Maybe that's why I can't sleep at night.
It's so well edited, that whole sequence. And I mean, and it's nothing that this is nothing that's in the book, but it's such a great way of communicating like Chance's, again, his points of reference, like this is his whole way of seeing the world is through television like this. And then they arrive at Eve's house. She's Eve in the movie, and Eve's house makes the mansion where Chance lived look like a pile of puke.
Yes.
Like this house is like, what is, does she live in Fort Knox? What is this place?
It's gigantic. And she has a husband who has some kind of an illness. He's in bed, most bedridden, or he's in the wheelchair getting around. He very rarely walks.
He has a whole room that they've walled off in glass and extra oxygenate to like pep him up. The whole thing with the husband in the movie is much more elaborate than it is in the book. In the book, you know, he's rich. Yes, it's a spectacular mansion. It's much nicer than the original mansion that Chance lived in. He's sick, but it is nothing like the cinematic extreme that we see in this movie. It's quite impressive.
We find out that Melvin Douglas is very ill. He's much older than Eve. He takes a liking to Chance. He calls him Chauncey. Everyone calls him Chauncey from here on out, Chauncey Gardner. And he has Jack Warden come over. Jack Warden just is always good.
He's great.
I love him in While You Were Sleeping. He's in 12 Angry Men. He's just always really good at what he does. And then the doctor comes over and he's never been to a doctor before. And they all say, you know, you should stay at the house for a little while until you get back on your feet. And he just insinuates himself into this family's life. And Mr. Rand really likes Chauncey and takes a liking to him quickly and kind of understands that his wife's attracted to him and is okay with it. Because he's like, I'm going to die soon. I you know, I want her to be with somebody who will take care. That's what I got from it, that he was.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the you get that impression in the book as well, but it's much in the movie. In the book, he dies much sooner in the story than in the movie. And so in the movie, there's a lot more time for that relationship to for both the relationship between Mr. Rand and Chauncey and Eve and Chauncey. Both of those relationships have longer to develop. And I think it's just so interesting. I really love the way that it's written and directed. It's great.
Just like in the book, in the movie, Chauncey becomes a talking head, as we would call it now. He's somebody that goes on television and gives his opinions. And he's just speaking about gardening. And nobody seems to understand that, except for Louise, who we spoke about. She was there at the beginning of the movie. And she has this, I love the speech that she gives midway through. Like, yeah, if you're a white man, this is real easy. That's all you have to be.
Yeah.
You know, and people just accept you. Nobody questions it. It's just you're treated like you're smarter. You deserve to be at the table, which it's true. You know, she's, that's the truth, Ruth. He's becoming very famous. The men around the president, I think, is it even mentioned in the book about the president and his wife and their sex life? Is that something they add for the movie?
No, I don't think that's in the book. I think that whole bit is for the movie. Yeah.
But the president, so in the book and in the movie, Chauncey says he's a voyeur, which is what our author is. He says he was. By the way, it was Robert C. Jones who also wrote on the screenplay. So there's a point where there's a gay man who makes a pass at him, and then Shirley MacLaine.
Yes, in the book, and that's how it is in the book. And in the book, and I think Peter Sellers performs it really well, that, like, again, because Chance doesn't really understand what sex is, apart from, again, what he would have seen on network. I mean, there's only three channels, like, pretty much, four channels if you count PBS in those days, right? So only what he would have seen on network television.
They didn't have cable yet.
Yeah, there was no cable. So those things were handled very well. Yeah, people kiss and then there's fireworks and waves crashing on the beach. Like, what is that?
Right.
So he doesn't really understand what it is. And so, but again, the adults around him assume that he's just being very deep.
Yeah. So he convinces Shirley MacLaine, like, well, I just like to watch. I'm just going to watch you. And then he's on the bed and she thinks he's getting excited finally because he's watching her, but he's actually watching the television. He's watching the lady doing yoga. And then he's trying to
Lilius yoga in you.
Yes. It's like, it's very ridiculous. And then we have this point where the Washington Post is sort of looking into, who is this guy? Where is he from? And a typical editor just screaming at his young assistant, well, keep trying, keep digging. She's like, I'm quitting. You find out that, you know, and nobody can find out what his deal is. In the meantime, President Bobby really likes this guy. There's a whole point of the movie where he and his wife is kind of throwing herself at him and he's like, oh, I'm just not in the mood. And it's probably because of what's going on with the vice president and there's some scandal there. And the men around him, and it's all men, all white men, they want to push this forward that Chauncey, maybe he needs to be a part of the government. He needs to be a part of the team. He needs to be a part of the committee or whatever it is. And then Mr. Rand dies. And I love this sequence where they have the funeral. And Jack Warden says, well, he didn't want me to do very much. And then you hear planes just shooting across.
It's like, so elaborate. Oh, yeah.
My goodness. And then the pallbearers, which are all men that work for the president, are carrying this man up the stairs. And there's that weird eye of eternity. Or what is that? Like, it's like a, it's a, it's a,
like a, what do
it's
you
a
call
symbol
that? And Freemason. Like
Freemason.
Like a Freemason
symbol.
Like a, yeah.
Yeah, like they're always watching you. And there's this pyramid, like, that's what he wanted? Like, he didn't want to be buried in the ground or whatever. But as they're carrying up these steps to his final resting place, they're talking about, maybe we should have Chauncey run. maybe we should have him on the ticket, or because this guy is just so boring and nobody connects with this guy and there's nothing bad about him and maybe there won't be any scandal. And they're just talking about this like they're just hanging out watching football and bullshitting around, like they're as they're carrying this man's body.
A coffin. Yeah.
A coffin.
Keep it small and quiet. And I don't want to go against Ben's wishes. But I thought it would be good while our close friends are carrying Ben to his last resting place to read from his quotes. I have no use for those on welfare. No patience whatsoever. But if I am to be honest with myself, I must admit that they have no use for me either. I do not regret having political differences with men that I respect. I do regret, however, that our philosophies kept us apart.
Yes, I agree. Except he's so boring.
What about Max? Well, he could never take an election.
I could never conceive.
The people of this country need to be awakened.
I could never convince.
What about Lawson? He's charismatic, exciting. Oh, he's a bit too exciting,
my
I'm afraid. If they start bringing
snacks
up things about.
Gentlemen, time is running out. We must come to a decision.
Good bowl of chili every now and then. I have heard the word sir more often than I have heard the word friend. But I suppose there are other rewards for wealth. I have met with kings during these conferences. I have suppressed bizarre thoughts. Could I beat him in a foot race? Could I throw a ball further than he? No matter what our facades, we are all children.
Well, what about Chauncey Gardner? But what do we know of the man? Absolutely nothing.
To raise your rifle,
we don't have an inkling of his past.
Correct.
That could be an asset.
Man's past cripples him. His background turns into a swamp and invites scrutiny.
Up until this time, he hasn't said anything that could be held against him.
The mail and telephone response from his appearance on that Burn show.
No matter what you are told,
it was the highest they've ever had.
And
there is no such thing.
And it was 95% pro.
Is it even true?
Well, I'm certainly open to the idea.
It would be absolute lunacy to support the president for another time.
That is exactly why I agree with Ben's final wishes.
I was born into a position of extreme wealth.
That's when Chauncey, at the very end of the movie, kind of walks away from the funeral, and then it's this wonderful, very famous scene. People talk about it all the time, but it appears as if he's walking on water as he walks away. And at one point, he takes his umbrella and he pokes in the water, you know, and then he just keeps going. And you don't know where he's going to or what's happening. But it's just beautiful and brilliant. I just super, super enjoyed it.
Just the whole thing, like the art direction and all of the incorporation of television throughout the whole thing. And it's so well performed and it's just so well directed. And the screenplay is excellent. It's a really good movie.
It's wonderful. It was nominated for many, many awards. The one thing, and I totally agree with Peter Sellers, at the very end of the movie, by the way, like when they're ready to run the credits, they don't even wait 30 seconds.
It's really fast.
Oh my God. They cut right into a goof reel where he's just breaking character, Peter Sellers.
Yeah.
And he said, you've got to take that out. You need people to have a minute at least. To kind of take in, I say never put that in there. Wait till there's like a DVD release. Like think 20 years ahead, right? Because
not necessary.
It's
so
not necessary. Like we all know he's funny, or they people are familiar. I mean, like, or it's not necessary for this movie that this guy is really funny and real. Like, look at him; he was acting this whole time. Like, yeah, we know that. Like,
yeah,
I think that's
it's such
big
a weird
mistake.
Choice.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And he was furious. And he thinks that's the reason why he was nominated for an Academy Award and he didn't get it. He won the Golden Globe. Melvin Douglas won for Best Supporting Actor. They were all nominated. They won several Golden Globes. But I was thinking, like, in one scene, it was Peter Sellers, Melvin Douglas, and Jack Warner. And he was the youngest, and he was the first one to die of those three. Oh, they're all gone.
That's true.
Except for Shirley MacLaine. Yeah.
The performances are so great. Mm-hmm. Every single performance. I love all of the character actors, you know, the kids on the street and the attorneys, the first set of attorneys and the, you know, the people at the television studio, like all of those character actors that are there are just lend so much. It just seems so spontaneous and I loved it. I loved it. And it feels very of the time. Like it definitely has the feel of that era in a way that would have, I feel like I didn't see it at the time. I would have been too young, but it must have felt like ripped from the headlines kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the way that, although it's a very different kind of story, kind of like the way Primary Colors felt when it came out, that it was so soon after that, those events that you were still living in the time that was being depicted, even though it was history. So I just really loved it. I loved all of the cultural references. They are really smart and provide just a scathing commentary on American culture of the time and the racism and the sexism and the hubris of the politicians. It's great.
It really is. I just super, super loved it. It was inducted into the National Film Registry in 2015. It's considered a classic. This was just a really, I'm so glad we watched this, because especially after I talked a lot of crap about Peter Sellers on my other show, which, you know, as a human, I could criticize him, but as an actor, I just think he's brilliant.
This is such a moving performance, and that he is able to keep you engaged from the first frame, you know, until the last frame with that amount of subtlety. It's perfect. It's so great. I love it. I you could forgive that weird blooper reel thing at the end, but but I agree. I must say, he threw a lot of big baby hissy fits about this movie, but I tend to agree with him on that point. I kind of do think that's true.
Oh, absolutely.
It does kind of wreck the effect, but the movie itself is just a gem.
I wanted to text you a few times as I was watching. I'm like, this is so good. I can't wait to talk about this. It's like one of those times when we watch a movie. It's just, it's fantastic.
And a lot of it, I think, you know, yes, the writing is great. And of course the performances are wonderful, but Hal Ashby's eye.
Yes.
I think really puts it over the top. Really, you know, he does such a brilliant job of creating that world. You know, I'm thinking of the house and all of the locations we talked about in Harold and Maude. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, Harold's mansion and Maude's, you know, caboose that she lived in, and you know, all of those locations, like his visual sense for using locations as characters in the story is so it's just on a very high level that you don't often see in cinema, and it just brings this movie being there to just puts it right over the top.
So book versus movie.
I gotta say movie. Same. I really liked the book.
Me too.
But I love the choices. Like, I feel like all of the best parts of the book come across, are communicated so beautifully without words in that movie. Loved it. So you had a great idea for what to do next.
Yes, I was doing a little bit of research and I forgot about this, but it's called The Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons. It is a movie starring Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett, two more beautiful people I can't imagine, but they star in this movie. And I forgot, it's from F. Scott Fitzgerald. It's a short story. It's about 42 pages. It's available everywhere. Super easy to get. There's also several versions on Audible. So that's what we're going to be covering next. And I'm super excited about that. And it's a love story, which is really cool because we are now part of the Frolic Podcast Network, which is all about romance and everything romance related. So we're really excited to be a part of Frolic Podcast Network.
I'm excited. I've never read this story. Love Fitzgerald's writing. So I'm very, very excited.
Me too. So you guys, we will be doing that soon. And please follow us on all the things. If you'd like to support the show, feel free to leave us a review, in iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. Or if you want to go that extra way and join our Patreon page, we're putting all of our episodes from 2018 and then previous to that up there. We have very affordable options for you. Or, you know what, send us an email. We'll send you some stickers. Tell a friend about the show or slap a sticker on your notebook or on your laptop and show everybody. But we are so happy that you came by today. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com and all of my social media callouts are at She's Not Your Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. And my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And we'll be back soon with The Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more outstanding podcasts to subscribe to at frolic.media/podcasts. If you want to find us on Facebook, we have a basic Facebook page, Book vs. Movie. We also have a private Facebook group. Just type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Just spell that out. Our email address is bookvsmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show, we do have a Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/bookvsmovie. We also have a promotion with Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/bookvsmovie to check out their service for yourself. We record our shows using the Handy H6N, donated to us by generous fans from the show who joined our Patreon page. Thank you all so much. We so appreciate it. We'll be back soon with a new episode.